Tape 4, Side 2. We are continuing our interview with Mr. William Block.
My wife's name is Maxine Horton, and she was born in Detroit. Her father was involved, I believe, with a small trucking company. Or maybe he was working for one of the automobile companies at that time. And then he got into a small trucking company, and they moved from Detroit to Oneonta, New York. Oneonta, New York. And she spent some early years in Oneonta, and then later they moved to Albany. In the Depression, his trucking company went down the chute. The girls had been taking, Maxine had two sisters, she was the oldest, and Shirley Ann was the middle one, a couple of years younger, and then there was Madeline, who was the youngest, and all three of them, well, at least the older two, had been taking music lessons, and Maxine had studied the saxophone and clarinet, and her sister the trumpet. With the encouragement of a couple of relatives on Mrs. Horton's side, who bought, they were a German family named Zimmerman, mostly centered around Chicago. And they were all singers. They liked to get together and sing, and they all love music, apparently. And one of Maxine's uncles had been a professional musician for a short time in his earlier life, and he encouraged Maxine's father to organize a family band. Maxine's mother played the piano. Her father could fake the bass drum, the bass fiddle. And so when his trucking company went sour, he started to book the family as a family orchestra. Okay. And they would go mostly weekends out of Albany to various towns in the area, which they could reach in a day, and they played at weddings, they played at nightclubs, they played, and the girls began to take dancing lessons, and they were doing a dance routine. Maxine sang, and so did the little one. The little one was the drummer, and she was a natural musician, and after all these years, she's now, of course, in her 60s, she still is a drummer, and she sits in jam sessions. She lives in San Diego. She sits in jam sessions with professional musicians of high caliber who always think that she's just absolutely amazing. Well, anyway, this went on for a while, and then they started to travel, and they were in various places in the country. At age 21, Maxine left the group. She didn't like the way her father was doing things. He paid them nothing. He kept the money, and she was very, very discontented, and so was her sister Shirley Ann. But Maxine left them and went to California and was was joined there by her next sister, Shirley Ann. And they played in various groups in Los Angeles and Hollywood. Maxine was getting very tired and she was terribly thin. And she had decided to take a vacation. And the last night she was with this group in Los Angeles or Hollywood, an agent came up to her and said that he had a very good job open. You have to remember this was the war. Men had been drafted and were in the service. A lot of young women had an opportunity then in the music business that they had never had before. And there was a small group playing at the Mission Inn in Riverside, California. And they needed someone with Maxine's abilities and specialties. And this was an agent from a very good outfit that she had always wanted to have some association with. So instead of going on vacation, she accepted and went out to the Mission Inn in Riverside. And that first evening that she was there was my first evening in Riverside. I had been transferred from Camp Stuart, Georgia, I think, to activate a new anti-aircraft unit, a cadre for a new unit. And we reported to Camp Hahn, California, which in those days was outside of Riverside. It happens that a friend of mine, an associate of my father's, drove me out from Los Angeles to Riverside. And he knew the manager of the Mission Inn, George Farr. And he introduced me to George. And Mr. Farr said to me, "Would you like to live here?" He said, "There are three officers who are looking for a fourth officer to live in a certain a big room, sort of a little suite kind of thing." And I said, "Well, I don't know what the rules are." He said, "Well, they're living here." And I said, "Well, I think I better go out to Camp Hahn first and find out whether I'm permitted to live off post." So I went out to Camp Hahn and reported in and inquired. And they said, "Yes, you can live off post as long as you arrive in time to stand reveille at 5:45 in the morning." I said, "That's fine." So I went back to the Mission Inn and told these officers later that day that I would be glad to move in with them, and I did so. And after we had something to eat, we wandered into this lounge, or really a nightclub there. Sort of an amazing coincidence that, you know, my first day there and Maxine's first day on the bandstand. And I don't know, somehow we got her to come over to the table and sat with us. And from then on, I started dating her. And of course, it was not a very, she liked the job because it wasn't very stressful. They were always through at 11 o'clock at night. It was not a late night thing at all. And so I would come back from the post and sleep a while and then come down, and we'd have, would always eat after she was through work. And so we'd have a salad or something like that. And then I would have to go to bed because I had to get up at 4:45. So I had known Maxine about 3 months. And we were at a New Year's Eve party. And I realized that I was falling in love, and I had always promised myself that I would never get married while I was in the service, that he didn't really, I kept telling myself, you don't really have judgment as to what's right for the rest of your life when you're in the service. There's too many uncertainties and so forth, and it's best to wait. So I, realizing I was falling in love, I was worried about this. It was beginning to worry me what was and so that New Year's Eve I met a colonel by the name of Devlin, who was commander of a battalion of anti-aircraft, very mobile, what were they called, half-track units, which were sort of half-armored and half a truck. And he said to me that night, Block, why don't you join me? I need an adjutant. Why don't you join me? And we're alerted to go overseas. And I said to him, great, I'd love it. And so on Monday, or whenever the holiday was over, he went up to headquarters to get me transferred to his unit. Unfortunately, or fortunately, which can't really, anyway, unfortunately, apparently for him, I had been in charge of a very large cadre pool, because our unit was not activated and we were pushed into a cadre pool. And they found that I had had some personnel experience, so I was put in charge of personnel problems of this pool. And we were gathering all the overstrength of units from all over the camp, and we had overnight, 10,000 troops and great number of officers, and our job was to get them ready as overseas replacements. Well, the first group we sent up to Fort Ord, which was the center from which they would ship out, wasn't very good. But after that, we got on to the scheme of things, and you had to complete their shots, their firing, their going through the infiltration course, all of the different preparations that a soldier had to have before he went overseas. And we were able to get this into a very good system, and we had everybody, we had a very good crew working on this. And so the commanding general of Camp Hahn got a letter of commendation from the commanding general of Fort Ord about the troops, the replacement troops that were going up to Fort Ord. So that when Devlin came to get me, and they found out that I was the guy who was in charge of personnel at the cadre pool, they told Devlin, no way, that he could get me for his unit. And so, to make a long story a little longer, Maxine and I were married in March. And
what date?
As the 23rd. And
we're talking 44?
That was 1944. That's right. We met in September of 43. So, this coming March, we will have our 50th wedding anniversary. Yeah. So my fears about marriage while you're in the service were unnecessary. Unfounded, right.
But very common. People did feel that way.
Yeah.
I too.
You weren't sure that you had full control of your emotions and so forth. And I also had a mother who was warning me all the time about marrying the right girl and all that sort of thing. And she wasn't very cooperative in this particular venture either. So anyway.
Was anybody from your family? Anybody from your family at the wedding?
No. What happened was that because this cadre pool was so busy, and we had so many troops coming in, units being deactivated and pushed into this pool, and we were so busy that the colonel in charge of it, who was a former high school principal by the name of McGowan, he would never let me off. And we tried to plan, I think we made up our minds maybe early in March that we'd like to be married. But he never would give me any notice of when I'd have some time off. Now, California has an obligation a requirement of a blood test. And it takes about 3 days. Well, you know, you have to have a little advanced knowledge. Well, I never did. Finally, one day he said to me, "You can have a long weekend this coming weekend." It was too late to get the blood test. So we drove over to Las Vegas and were married there. And by that time, most of the officers I had been living with in 501 at the Mission Inn had drifted away for one reason or another. And so Maxine moved in with me there, and that became our honeymoon apartment at the Mission Inn. So that's really the history. We were pretty innocent. So innocent that our first child, Bill Jr., was born 8 months and I think in 7 days after we were married. And he was, my wife always says he was 3 weeks early. So we obviously very soon had an offspring. Now, he was born in New Haven, Connecticut. What happened was that when I knew that Maxine was pregnant, and that wasn't too long after we were married, obviously, I tried to find a way to stay with her if I could. And across my desk came a notice of a new program, which was obviously being prepared for the invasion of Japan. And it was a program where you could go to military government school at the University of Virginia for 6 weeks and then study Japanese for 6 months at either Yale, Harvard. About six universities were teaching Japanese to Army groups. So I applied for that program and was accepted. And we left in August of 44 and went east, drove east, and went to the University of Virginia for 6 weeks. And then I was assigned to Yale, and we went up to, well, I went up to New Haven, and Maxine stayed with my mother in New York. For a bit until I found something to rent. And it was very hard. New Haven and during the war was pretty busy and there wasn't much housing available. I finally found a little house on the end of the car line in West Haven. It was a little box of a house. And it was owned by a railroad worker who had had a heart attack and was told by the doctors to take 6 months off. Well, that's exactly what I needed, was a 6 month rental. So we arranged that, and Maxine came up, and she hadn't been up very long, and we went to a Yale, I think it was Yale, Virginia game, and when I found my tickets were for all the way around the Yale Bowl opposite from where I expected, and I think that that's what started her ready to give birth, because we had that long walk around the Yale Bowl. So anyway, he was born at New Haven Hospital November 28th, I think, 1944. So that's really the story. Maxine's mother was from a quite large family, the Zimmerman clan. I think it's spelled with two M's and two N's, if I'm not mistaken.
From where? From where?
Well, they were mostly in the Chicago area. Where were they originally
yes.
from? I think Cologne, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure of that.
And her father?
Well, her father was of Scotch-Irish descent. His name was very English, Aubrey Horton. And
mother's name was...
I don't know too much about when these families came over to the U.S. I really don't have that information. And I don't know that Maxine's ever mentioned that or whether she knows.
Her mother's name?
Her mother's name was Anne. And I do remember that her grandfather, Anne's father, I knew him before he passed away, and he was an interesting guy, and he was very sure and sort of cocky. And I don't make statements very often unless I'm fairly sure of my facts. And he and I got into some kind of a little argument. It wasn't a serious argument, about something, I don't recall what now. And I guess we were able to look it up or get the facts or something. And it turned out I was right. He was wrong. He had never lost his little German accent. He said, "You think you're so smart." And it was just the opposite. I think that he thought he knew all the answers. But anyway, it was interesting. Maxine still sees one of her cousins. He lives in LaPorte, Indiana. And he and I had our differences about politics. He's a very right-wing Republican. And the congressman from that area was an excellent liberal congressman. Do you know who?
LaFollette?
No. No, this is more recent. And after he lost up there, this cousin of Maxine's helped the Republican candidate, and they beat this man. He became head of New York University and made a brilliant record there. I can't think of his name this minute, but he's top-notch. Top-notch man, and they got a very ordinary Republican in this place.
Are there others?
Hmm?
Are there others?
Well, we won't answer that. There are some.
Yes, of course there are.
Well, Maxine's two sisters. I say the one lives in San Diego, and still is a active musician.
Was she married?
Oh, she's been married three times, I think.
Any children?
Yes, she's had several children, and they're mostly in the San Diego area. Lisa is one, a very nice young woman. This youngest kid, because they formed this orchestra, never had much schooling. I don't think she ever finished high school. And she's not... Her life is music, and she's a scatterbrain on a lot of other things. Not very practical in any sense of the word. And has not been what I would call a first-rate mother. But this young woman helped bring up the other children, and she is terrific. So you never know in a family like that, which is so loosely put together and where the husbands are rarely around, how the children turn out. It's amazing.
Shirley?
Mm-hmm.
And Shirley Ann.
Shirley Ann had was married, I think, twice. She has several. And my wife would have to give you more of that information of who they all are. I can't keep track of all of it, but about 6 years ago, Shirley Ann suffered a major stroke, and she's in a nursing home in San Diego. And she really is not with it at all. We visited her now two or three times, and I think she recognizes Maxine, but I'm not absolutely sure.
She has children?
Yes, she has children. She had children.
Both sisters wound up on the West Coast.
Yes. Yes. I think the opportunities in their field were probably better there.
Shirley continued with her trumpet?
She did until... She did until, I think until she had the stroke. I can't remember now whether she had, no, that's right, excuse me. She had dropped it quite a bit before. She was working redoing clothes for people. She was very good at sewing and cutting and so forth, designing and things of that sort. Yeah, she. I don't know about design, but she. If a person wanted to take, found something that didn't fit right, and she wanted to redo it, Shirley was very good at that sort of thing. And I think she made a living that way. She had twin daughters, I think, Laureen, L-O-R-E-E, who's a wonderful kid, and who has been the one offspring of Shirley that has tried in every way to help her mother, has even gone so far as to bring her to their apartment for Thanksgiving or something like that. And, you know, I don't think that Shirley knows what's going on. And it's really a very remarkable effort to try to, you know, bring her. And she's so upbeat about it and cheerful about it. I respect her for that. The other sister, I guess they were twins, Doreen, is living quite a bit further north than San Diego, and I don't think participates in family matters in that family as much. Then there's there's one boy who not turned out too well. And of course, the father of these children has long since passed away. So, and with Shirley in her condition, these children had to steer on their own. And Laureen has done quite well. Doreen is married, has several children, I think. And the boy is a drifter, unfortunately. I've tried to help him a little bit when he's asked for some help, and I give him, but it doesn't. It's throwing money away, I think. Anyway, that's the sum total of that. Maxine's mother died a few years ago. She lived to be 98.
End of side 2, take 4, to be continued on take 5.
Through with.